job. So I'll record it anyway. So again, to focus more on the meditation, and hopefully I'll try and get the talk completed maybe about after 40 minutes. So you're asked to do a guided meditation, so you can do a quick guided meditation afterwards before 10 o'clock. Or 9 o'clock, sorry. And the night from 9 to 10, there is opportunities for interviews, only 10 minutes each. But if I could request for you, when you actually put your time in, don't just, you know, one over here and one over there. Try and put it in line, like, you know, 9 o'clock and then 10 past 9 and 20 past 9 and then half past 9, instead of just doing one at 9 o'clock and one at 9:30 and another one at 9:50. Because, you know, that means that, you know, they all get done one after the other. And I'm not sitting there too short a time to meditate, can't go to the toilet because you might be coming. So out of compassion for me, just one after the other, with no gaps. Excellent. And please also just keep it to meditation questions if you can. And lastly, so often when people come to those interviews, they ask questions, and it's just such a good question, it's a shame it's not shared with everybody. So my preference will always be to put those questions on a piece of paper so we can discuss them in the question and answer time in the evening from 8 till 9 or 9:30 or something. Because that means that your question, the answer can be for everybody. Because what happened when we started doing this interview, someone asked a question and I gave an answer, and then the next one came and they asked the same question, the same answer, another 10 minutes, exactly the same. So out of efficiency, just ask the question just in the evening time, and then it's everyone can share it. But of course there are some personal questions you'd like to ask, and so that's why we do have the opportunity for the personal interviews in the morning and also in the afternoon from 4 till 5. But many times when people do come to those interviews, they say, oh, you've answered all my questions in the talk, and hopefully that's what happens today. Because I want to talk some more about the meditation, more formal meditation. We start just with the sitting meditation. I already tried to encourage you that you don't need to sit on the floor. You can sit on the chairs. You can get as many cushions as you can possibly find in this place. You can bring your pillows. You can bring all sorts of stuff, you know, from your rooms. But please don't bring your bed and mattresses. So, to keep the body comfortable, and only you know what is the best posture for you. That's where you've got to feel it. Don't think it. Don't follow the pictures in the books, but you use your mindfulness and kindness to find the best position for your bottom, your back, your shoulders and everything. That's one of the purposes of mindfulness awareness. You can feel how things actually are rather than believing how they should be. So sometimes people say, oh, sit with a straight back, full lotus. And they think, wow, this is how you get enlightened. It's not how you get enlightened, it's how you go to hospital. And some people are so stupid, they just believe that you have to do it this way and that, not that way. And one of my stories in hospital with typhus fever, I already mentioned about the needles they used to use in those days in the first talk. But there, after about 3 or 4 weeks, feeling really terrible, that's when, I don't know why I didn't do this beforehand, sometimes you think, what would I tell other people to do? Just meditate. So I meditated. Now, it probably was in the middle of a fever, because you felt so awful, nothing else to do. But you know how to meditate, as I'm going to tell you afterwards. As long as your body feels reasonably okay, which it did, and amazing, it surprised me how you get into such a beautiful deep meditation, even with zero energy. and just in the middle of a fever. But it wasn't through force. Force, I couldn't beat a fever, but what I could do is just let it go and just go inside. And the main reason I tell that story is that when I came out from this deep meditation feeling amazing, I happened to look at my posture. And if you've ever been in bed feeling really sick, you don't really have a posture which you can see in any book. One leg was this way, one leg was the other way, the hands were all over the place. But it worked. And so that proved to me, by my own experience, that postures aren't that important. The only reason for that posture is that in your situation, today, in this body, in its health and sickness, its heat and cold, it feels good to you right now. So you check the posture every time. Sometimes I put my hands in my lap, sometimes on my knees, sometimes I cross them, like I was doing this morning. So whichever posture you find appropriate, that's the one you use. So you check it through. And maybe do some adjustments, trial and error, move it this way and that way, until you find what your mindfulness tells you is the most comfortable posture, which you can maintain for the period of the meditation. And just doing that much helps solve a lot of pain and aches during the meditation period, and also a lot of sicknesses in your daily life. You become aware of your posture, you become aware of how you hold your back. Even when these days, I think it was it Gerald was telling me in Hong Kong, that he's got an ache in his arm. It used to be tennis elbow. It's no longer tennis elbow, it's iPhone elbow. He's always Googling. And so that sometimes you're not really aware of what you're doing and how you're holding or how you're actually doing your whatever SMSs or whatever. And because of that, people get sick. So when you're aware, the body sends you many signs. You're aware of your body, aware of your posture, and so much else. And of course, the next thing about this little method is that you're also able to take a look at one part of the body and relax it to the max. And people know the story of things like having food poisoning, which I had in that cave you visited yesterday. And as I was, real food poisoning, you're in agony. Every minute or two, you scream, "Ah! Oh! And the reason I tell that story is to wake people up after a big breakfast. If you just tell the number without some drama in it, people fall asleep. But that was absolutely true, really in agony until I decided to do meditation, but not trying to watch my breath. Whatever's in front of my mind right now is the most important, and that was this incredible painful feeling right in my guts. And not to get rid of it, not to cure it, but to care for it. It's another example of that anger eating monster. Get out of here, you don't belong, I can't stand you any longer. I want to escape from this really bad pain. That makes it worse. And you can feel that, your mindfulness is on something you can't ignore anyway. And every time I got afraid, got negative, tried to get rid of it, it got more painful. Mindfulness gives you feedback. Every time I said, okay, the door of my heart's open, it's not going to kill me. It's unpleasant, but that's part of life. And so as soon as I relaxed with it, gave it kindness, it was important, it was teaching me something. My goodness, it really did teach me a lot. Right with it, being kind to it, not trying to cure it, caring for it, feeling got less and less. The pain started to get less and less and less and diminish. Exactly like the Buddha said in the anger-eating monster story. In 20 minutes, that's all it took. for that anger eating monster to totally vanish from my guts. Never came back again. That was amazing. It's your own personal experience, and it's not just an imaginary pain. That was just a screaming. So that just shows you just what you can do with this meditation. So what I do after my body is nice and relaxed, I find some part of my body which is irritating, aching or in pain. There's always something there. So you know, you look, scan the body quickly and say, okay, maybe in my, not really that bad, my lower intestines is a bit, feels a bit sort of tense in there. So just focus on it. Totally focus on it. And just open the door of my heart to it. Let it be. And it relaxes and relaxes and relaxes and relaxes. Until it disappears. And therefore you can actually relax inner parts of your own body. And it's amazing. All it is mindfulness and kindness. It's a simple thing to do. Most people though are not kind enough. They want to get rid of it. They want to do something else. But mindfulness and kindness is really powerful. And of course, as you know, that sometimes I have to perform. You know, you're down to give a talk somewhere, or these days in conferences, or you make an appointment for the TV or for the radio, and you know, you've got to turn up. And an example which comes to mind, and this is a very good example for you, if you think this place is cold in the morning. A couple of years ago I went to South Korea. Up in the mountains, I think it's Wonju district, where they're going to hold the next Winter Olympic Games. So this was cold. And I think the time was in February. February, Northern Hemisphere, South Korea, up in the mountains. And indeed, it was minus 15 degrees centigrade outside. We were advised if we wanted to warm up, open the refrigerator and stand in front of the refrigerator. The refrigerator was warmer inside the fridge than it was outside. So, there you were, this big event, and I was supposed to have an interview, a live interview with the national TV. And I woke up about an hour before the scheduled interview. I was sneezing, and all this stuff was coming out of my nose. Imagine, you're on live TV, and you sneeze in front of the interviewer. That would not be a good interview. Have you ever seen anybody being interviewed on TV, sneezing or coughing? It's not done. Usually they will give you medication. All these chemicals, I don't like that stuff. So instead, I had 1 hour to get my nose in shape. So what did I do? Meditate. Really feel the sensation of like, very hard to give it a name, an itch, a throb, an irritation, which was getting all the sinus stuff coming out. So what did you do? Care for it. There, no, it's okay. Acham Brahm loves you. But not with my fingers, just with my mind. Being kind to it and relaxing it. And it's wonderful what you can do. Oh, half an hour. No more snot was coming out of my nose. Didn't need to sneeze anymore. And you go in front of the camera and perform. That's actually how it works. And that's how you, it's not that hard to learn, how you can learn how to give yourself some really good health outcomes. Simply by learning how to meditate, be mindful and be kind. Now the reason I say that is because it gives you motivation to actually follow this practice. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. Acham Brahm said, we live many times, I can get enlightened next lifetime. I'm just going to relax and fantasize or fall asleep or dream or whatever you do when you've you're meditating or supposed to be meditating, but when it's your own physical health, now that is important. So, it gives you motivation to do this properly, to be aware of your body and to be kind and learn how to relax it. And it also gives you very good rewards very quickly, because you can feel your body relax. It's not just belief in some dogma, you can actually feel it. You have results, and it's really helpful in your ordinary life. So it's an important thing to do, it motivates you to get this mindfulness and kindness developed on your own body. That motivation is important. Once you got that motivation, as I said yesterday, but I'm reinforcing this, your mindfulness becomes strong, your kindness is strong, and then you not only have got good physical outcomes, you've been developing the two main muscles, if you like, of meditation, awareness and kindness. So when you use those muscles, you train them, and then you put them onto your mind. Just like if you're playing, say, tennis. You have to lift weights, you have to run, it's got nothing about winning a tennis match, but your muscles are now strong, your reflexes are sharp. So those things you train yourself in a gym, then you can make use of in the match. So you're training your mindfulness and kindness on your body, so when you use it on your mind, it's very, very sharp. And it's exactly the same. You become aware of what I called yesterday the peaceometer. How peaceful are you? How agitated? Get to the heart of this. Because sometimes people go watching their breath, scanning their body, doing this, doing that, and they get more and more tense. They're going in the wrong direction. So when you look right at your peaceometer, you know what's working and what's not working. Straight away. And there you find, just like you relax your body, to relax your mind. Look at that peaceometer, and you find pretty quickly how to relax the mind. Now what is it? Kindness, compassion, letting go. That's what relaxes. So if you find that, you get more confidence and faith in this letting go. Once you are relaxed enough, you're peaceful enough, then you can go watching your breathing. One of the problems which I noticed when people do breath meditation was that they go to the breath too quickly. When they're not ready yet, they're not prepared. So they go watching the breath, two or three breaths, and off they're wandering off somewhere else. Five or six breaths and they're half asleep. Eight or nine breaths and they're fully asleep. In other words, then you think, oh, I'm not trying hard enough. No, you didn't prepare properly, which is why you can't watch the breath. So relax the body, calm down your mind with the peaceometer, and then when you start watching the breath, it's easy. Watch your breath for hours, no problem at all, because you prepared. And secondly, it's quite often, this is how I meditate, I don't even go looking for the breath. After a while the breath comes to me, just aware of the breath. Here's the breath. You just watch it. It's the only thing in there. And you know how to watch it. You don't control it. You're kind to your breath. And to know what I mean by being kind to your breath, sometimes you wonder, why does the mind keep wandering off all over the place? Why is it you can't watch the breath for 3 or 4 seconds before it's off falling asleep, fantasizing, planning, dreaming, going off into the past? And you know that most of the stuff you think about is totally useless, it's a waste of time, but you do it anyway. You know why? Anything except watching the breath. And you've got this whole database of things to think about. Just like when a person's bored and they go onto the TV, 160 channels. I don't know these things, but Foxtel or some other tell. You can go on there and you've got so many channels. What happens? People look at them, nothing on the TV. You must be crazy. 160 channels and you can't find anything on the TV? Just like when I was a kid. You go to the refrigerator to get a snack, and it was so full that food was falling out of the refrigerator. You look there, nothing to eat. It's crazy, people these days. But that's what we have. We have our whole mind is jam-packed with things to think about. And why do we do that? Sometimes we just eat anything, or you watch anything on the TV because you're bored. Want to escape somewhere. And that is one of the reasons why we have a wandering mind. Anything will do. Nothing particularly interesting. Nothing important. But just why? And it was always because I started contemplating. Why am I always trying to escape? Who am I trying to escape from and why? And then you realize when you think, plan, remember stupid memories, when you fantasize or fall asleep, you're just trying to escape. From whom? You're escaping from yourself. Anything to get away from me. Why? Because you never developed a beautiful relationship to yourself. As for me, I am my best friend. So, when I close my eyes and Mama says, hey, you're back again, great, let's hang out together. Because we're good friends. We're not afraid of one another. But, if you've always told yourself off, stupid me, I'm a bad person, I'm really awful, then you've got this terrible relationship. Basically, you don't love yourself, you're not kind to yourself, you're not forgiving to yourself. That's why we have the teddy bears. Have the teddy bears. Teddy bears never complain about you. Even though you squeeze it so hard, you probably asphyxiate it if it was out of your lungs. Even though sometimes you see people sitting on them because their cushions are not big enough. But does the teddy bear ever complain? No, and it's always there for you. So that's one of the reasons we do teddy bear meditation. So if you haven't got a teddy bear, you've always got yourself. So you can give yourself a hug. In other words, when you're kind to yourself. It's interesting, I did that sort of exercise when I was, where was I the last time? I think it was over in, it was actually in Nova Scotia with some Canadians. And many of them were from Dalhousie University. Most of those were academics. So I said, if you want to love yourself, give yourself a hug. What was interesting, the people who never did it, they just stood there, or sat there, and they refused to give themselves a hug. That's the reason that you are so agitated, unhealthy and stressed. You don't love yourself. It's like a little test. Now who was willing to give themselves a hug? Who understood themselves enough, was kind enough, and allowed themselves to hug themselves. And if you can do that, that shows you're starting to get a good relationship to yourself. It's not stupid to be kind to yourself. It's actually very wise and therapeutic. So, once a person does learn how to be kind to themselves, learns how to forgive themselves, let themselves be, they don't run away from themselves. That's the core reason for restlessness. And why we run around all over the world, trying to go here, trying to do that, watching movies, sort of anything, chatting, create. A lot of times we actually create all the problems in our life. And so what do you create these problems for? It's something to do. We're addicted to drama. We love drama. If we don't have drama somewhere in our family, then we tune into Korean drama. Or Thai drama, or Western drama, anything to excite ourselves. So when you learn a bit of kindness towards yourself, your body, your mind, it's amazing how easy it is to stay with yourself and be peaceful. The mind doesn't wander away because you're kind. The classic story, which I tell usually every retreat, is woman over here in Perth, 6-year-old son, threw a tantrum, and the 6-year-old said, "Mummy, that's it, I've had enough, I'm leaving home." 6-year-old kid, and a very, very wise mum. As soon as the kid said, "I want to leave home," the mother said, "Wonderful idea, good idea, I'll help you pack." Now I know that some of you mothers thought that was a really good idea, but you weren't clever enough to actually to go through with it. Many of you think it would be wonderful if a 6-year-old left home, bit of peace and quiet for sure. But she went through with it. She went into the bedroom with her kid to pack all the essentials of life, which was a Superman costume and a teddy bear, and you know, all the other essentials which a 6-year-old thinks can't live without. And she also got the favourite sandwich for her kid, put it in a brown paper bag, and she told me, she waved her kid off at the front door of her house. "Bye bye, son, have a wonderful life. Don't forget to, you know, to call every now and again." And so the son went out by himself, left home for the first time at 6 years of age, with the mother waving him off, walking with his little suitcase and a brown paper bag with a sandwich in. Went to the end of the path, opened up the garden gate, and turned, say, left, and went off into his life for the first time, independent and free. You know how far he got? Maybe about 100 metres. Before he felt terribly homesick. He's only 6 years of age. He turned around, went through the garden gate, down the path, the mother hadn't moved. "Welcome home, son." That was one smart mother. If she'd have argued, "No, you can't leave home, you're too young," rah, 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 and had a big argument, if you do that, "So you want to leave home, off you go, son, go with my blessing." And then the son would always like to come back. Of course it would, because you're kind. You know, you love each other. Who wants to run away from somebody like that? So that similarly is how you deal with your mind. Instead of when your mind says, "Right, that's it, I can't stand you, I'm falling asleep." "Oh, I don't like you, keep on telling me to watch my breath. I don't want to watch my breath, I'm going to go off into fantasies." So what do you do if you're wise? Say, "Okay, mind, off you go, have a nice fantasy. When you're finished, pack its bags, give it a sandwich." "Well, oh, bye-bye, mind, have a nice life." And when you understand the emotional intelligence, if you do that to your mind, the mind goes wandering off somewhere. But it comes back pretty quickly. Because you've got a good relationship with your mind. But if it comes back and you scold it, "Look, you're not supposed to think those thoughts. Actually, I'll be reading my mind. Shush, don't do that. I'll be fussy. I'm supposed to be a very good meditator." You know, actually, I'm my husband as well. If he reads my mind and tells my husband what I'm thinking, that's our marriage is done, it's finished. Don't think like that. If you're kind to your mind, then your mind likes to stay with you. Sometimes I ask, why do people keep coming to my retreats? Why do they keep hanging around? Why do they keep taking photographs? And the reason is because I'm kind. You like to hang around kind people. Even if you don't learn anything. Most of these talks you've heard before anyway. All the stories, all the jokes. But why do you keep coming? Because of the kindness. The kindness is what binds people together. And the kindness is what binds your mindfulness to whatever object you happen to be watching. And it doesn't run away then. That's why the key to a still mind is kindness. If your mind wants to run away, off you go, you come back again. Then it will stay with you much, much longer. So, the kindness and the awareness is the key. And then you're just watching your peace of it, and then your breath comes, okay, how's breath, how are you going? You don't tell the breath to go in through your nostril or going through your belly. That's too much control. Breath, you can come in and go out whichever way you want. You've been doing this all my life. My breath has never let me down once. That's why I'm still alive. So you know, I can trust my breath, even when I'm asleep, when I'm busy, when I'm jet lagged, my breath still does its job. So why should I try and control it once I get start meditating? My job is just to observe the breath, just basically be its friend, hold its hand, whichever way the breath wants to go, I'm going with you. So my breath is my guide. I don't guide my breath, I just go with it. And that means don't really worry where the breath is going in, whether it's long or short, this way or that way, just be with it. Just trust. Kindness, trust and awareness. And because the breath is a rhythm which is very comfortable to settle into. And it took me a while before I realized why the breath is such an amazing object to meditate on. It's because that from your earliest memory in this life, maybe you haven't got that memory, but it's in your subconscious, when you're in your mother's womb, imagine a baby in a womb, going up and down, with your mother's breath. And when you were born, breastfeeding on your mother's tummy, up and down, up and down. A baby from the very earliest times gets used to this rhythm of breathing from the mother. So much so that you have this feeling that watching the rhythm of the breath is safe, comfortable, and you recognize it as secure. So it's a very easy rhythm to be with. So once you start watching your breath, you don't really need that much force, just relax. If the breath wanders off, okay, tell me when you come back. Don't control it. You're kind to it. You care for it. You don't try and cure it. And that way soon you relax so much. And this is where the nice part of meditation starts to happen. The mindfulness has different levels of intensity. And when you start to relax, when you don't use force to meditate, then you're starting to preserve your energies. And your energy, which would usually get wasted in thinking, in reacting, in planning, that takes so much mental energy. When that is not used up, it's only got one place to go, and that is in your mindfulness. Your mindfulness gets stronger, more energized, more powerful. You are getting into powerful and super powerful mindfulness states. It's not just being aware through force, it's cultivating mindfulness through stillness. Not doing that much. You will literally wake up. You become more and more aware. And the signs of that are the dumplings taste more delicious than ever before. The rice is sweeter. The flowers are, the colors are more intense. Everything you can see much more and more deeper. That is a sign your mindfulness is increasing in its power. You literally see more, you can smell more, and you can feel like you haven't felt before. You're so much more sensitive. There's that part of your mind which knows the mindfulness gets empowered. Because you're still. And that becomes when meditation becomes really good fun. I've always sometimes wondered why it was in the first times I did meditation retreats. Why is it on retreats the food is always so delicious? Is the food delicious here?
Yes.
It's going to get better. Not because of the cook. It's going to get better because your mindfulness is going to increase and increase and increase. So just in just one sort of one just spoon of curry, you can taste so much more. The last year, when I did my 2 weeks meditation, when I go in my cave and I don't do anything else, the first time I came out of my retreat and went for breakfast, it was just had some baked beans. And that first spoon of baked beans, I couldn't believe it. It was an explosion of taste in my mouth. Never before realized that baked beans were just so amazing. So many amazing flavors and the textures and the sweetness and the sourness all coming together. That was a wow moment. It was an explosion of taste. It only happens after a deep meditation. The rest of the time it's just baked beans. What do you expect? It's not exactly, you know, Michelin 5-star cuisine. But it just, your mindfulness is so incredibly strong. Everything tastes incredible. Now that's when the meditation really starts to take off. Everything you see is amazing. The clouds in the sky. Wow, you can look at them for hours. So much stuff going on. And the sunsets you get here. Wow. You enjoy them and see them like never before. You're waking up, and it is fun to wake up. And you get lots of energy because you're not wasting anything complaining and planning and fantasizing. You really want to be here, because here now looks very beautiful. So even your breath becomes so easy to watch. Breathing in, breathing out. Wow. No force required. Now you're rolling in meditation. Stay there and have lots of peace and lots of happiness. That also occurs when you do walking meditation. After a while, present moment awareness. Start thinking, be kind to your body, be with your body. Walk as fast or as slow as your body wants. You don't control the body, you listen to the body, you just do what your body wants as you're walking. And after all, you relax so much, you can feel so many more sensations just in one step. Thousands, millions of different movements require just this step. And please, if you can, take off your socks when you're doing the walking meditation, because you can really feel the thing. There's a yoga mat in there. You can feel the sensations on your bare feet as you walk. And soon, because you don't do very much, your mindfulness increases and you get really blown away by how many sensations there are just in moving one foot. And pushing it forward and going down again. You really start to bliss out because it's simple. You don't think of the past and the future. You don't have to. You just walk to the end and walk back again. It's such a simple thing to do. You don't need to do anything. You said just walk. Because you're not doing much, it gives you more opportunity to be more aware of what you're doing. Which means you get quiet and peaceful. And really start enjoying this meditation. And understand why we call it Club Med. This is fun. This is why people come here. Because you get more fun here than you do by going to a movie or going to one of these holiday camps. This is so much joy. When a couple of years ago an executive came over from Sydney and she sent me an email a couple of days after she returned. She returned to her boss, who took one look at her and said, "What drugs is Ajahn Brahm giving you in Perth? I'm not going to complain, only next time you bring me back some." Because she looked so happy and so peaceful. The boss thought she must be taking some ecstasy. It is ecstasy, but not the tablet, but the Dhamma of the Buddha. And you can see that. People get really happy and bliss. And that is what's supposed to happen. That is what will happen, as long as you follow the instructions. Da da da. So, we're going to do a guided meditation now. So, just only for 18 minutes, so you get a feel for it. Especially those who haven't meditated much before. So, sit down. And close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, you can have more awareness of your posture, which means the position of your body. Now instead of looking at the whole thing, we just go part by part up through the body just to check everything's in its right position. So you begin with your legs. How are your legs positioned right now? You're mindful of any feelings or sensations in and around your legs, from the top of your thighs down to your toes, on both legs. Do you need to move? To adjust? To fit it? So, try fidgeting. Move here, move there. And your mindfulness will be able to tell you what is the best position today, now. Remember, you have to hold this position for, say, 20 minutes. So it's not just temporary comfort, it's comfort which you can sustain for the period of the meditation. And then you check your bottom, your buttocks. If you need a pillow underneath them or a cushion, then please put a cushion underneath them. If you've got folds of clothing biting into your flesh, then just straighten it out. Don't be stupid. You've got a little pain now and think, oh, this is not much, because the pain gets worse and worse and worse the longer you sit. So by making sure everything is okay at the beginning, it means you're okay later on. and once the buttocks are okay, then go up to your back. Stretch it, relax it, move it left, right, forward, backwards. So sometimes you need a bit of trial and error until you find the most comfortable position for your own back. That includes the shoulders as well. Don't tense them up, just relax them. And so how do you do that? Feel, experiment, and learn. Soon you learn how to relax. Tension is because you hold two ends of this body too tightly. Just letting go of both ends means the thing relaxes. And then look at your hands. The position of your hands defines how your arms are located. So, does this feel comfortable right now for your arms and hands? Find the best position. There you are. And lastly, your head on top of your neck. Making sure not too far to the left, not too far to the right, not too far forward, too far back. Just nicely balanced. And there you very carefully got your body into a good position. This is called posture. And all the time, all you've used is your own mindfulness, which allows you to get feedback, and your kindness. Kindness to spend time looking after your body. Now go to the next level. Find a place in your body which is irritating, aching, or in pain. The most disturbing part of your body is always somewhere. And zoom in on that feeling like you do on Google Maps or Google Earth. Zoom in on it. As you zoom in, focus in on that one disturbing feeling. The other parts of the body should fall off the screen, so you're just focusing on one thing, which is a problem. Once you're aware of that small part of the body which is causing problems, then you should soon be able to notice the disturbance, the ache, the pain, sometimes gets worse. Sometimes gets better. And see if you can, as they say, connect the dots, and you'll find it's the attitude of your mind makes that feeling of pain worse or better. You're afraid, you try and get rid of it, it gets worse. You're kind to that feeling in the body. Embrace it, allow it to be, and it relaxes, and the irritation or pain gets less. You experience this for yourself. And mindfulness allows you to get feedback. You soon understand from your own experience how to relax pains like food poisoning, or even irritations which cause a cold. You relax it all away. Mindfulness and kindness to your body. once the body is really relaxed, then you can let it go. Because you've been aware of your body for a good cause, your own health, gave you motivation not to get lost in thinking and planning. To continue this exercise, now you look at your piezometer. How peaceful are you? How agitated are you? Once you're aware of that part of your mind called the piezometer, now see if you can manipulate the mind so you get more and more peaceful. Find out what calms your mind down and discover what agitates it. That's what I mean, that it gives you some sense of control of your own mind. You learn how to make peace, be kind, be gentle. And you learn the opposite. Forcing, getting upset, is what causes the mind to be unmindful and tired. Once your piezometer gets very calm, then you can either invite the breath in, am I breathing in, am I breathing out, or quite often the breath just comes to you. When you're with your breath, you're aware of your breath, be kind to your breath. Do not, never treat your breath like a slave or like a maid, telling it what to do. Be kind and aware in your own breathing, and then you'll find your breath will stay with you. Your mind doesn't wander off when you're with your best friend, your breath. And just see how the meditation develops when you're just caring for your breath. And nothing else. Just being a friend to your breathing. Aware of this rhythm. Breathing in, breathing out naturally without force. the end of the short meditation. Don't open your eyes yet, but feel. Find out what works or what doesn't work. Like anything else, with skill. So skill comes from practice. Making errors, but learning every time. Yours to carry on meditating here, do some walking meditation, have a cup of tea, just go and find a kangaroo to hug. Any excuse for a walk. And also just do some lying down meditation. Up to you. So those interviews held just outside the office. There it goes. Have a wonderful morning. Sadhu.